Hello and welcome to the University of Eye podcast. I'm David Horton. When asked questions about applying to US universities, I, and I think many other counsellors, have to answer with the phrase, "It depends." One of the areas where it depends a lot is when we start to talk about universities in California. And that's because, as well as universities in California, there's also the universities of California. The University of California is a system. And in the use of that word system is a clue to how it may operate on particularly different ways to universities elsewhere in the United States. When students and counsellors are learning enough about US universities and feel they've got their head around it, to then put into it the complexities upon complexities of the University of California system can be quite mind-boggling. So my guest today will hopefully enable people to unboggle their minds and learn more about the wonderful opportunities they have within the University of California.
My guest today is an expert in the University of California system as much as anyone can be, mostly because she works for the University of California system, which is what we're talking about today, but also knows the real intricacies and ins and outs. So, Kuka, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for letting me join you.
It's a great pleasure to have you on. Do you mind just introducing yourself probably a bit more formally and explaining to the audience what you do and which of the wonderful UCs you are working at?
I'd be happy to. So my name is Kuka Acosta. I'm the Associate Director for School Services in the Office of Undergraduate Admission at the University of California, Santa Barbara, UCSB, yay. We, as a system, have 10 campuses, and Santa Barbara is the medium-sized campus among them. 9 undergraduate campuses. So for Santa Barbara, we're housed about 100 miles north of Los Angeles, just as a point of reference in the state of California. Medium-sized university means 26,000 students. Ah, how is that humanly possible to be a medium-sized school, right? But our niche is that we're primarily undergraduate-focused. So about 23,000 students are working on a bachelor's degree. I get the luxury of working with undergraduate students who are looking to apply to us as either freshmen, so out of high school, or transfer students, starting at another university or institution and then finishing their last 2 years with us. I've been at the University of California going on 18 years. It is my home. I'm very proud of it. And I do know that we do work as a system. So we have a lot of requirements, or all of our requirements, that are similar, but our selection, which is different. So it's not easy to navigate us. Good luck.
Well, that's why we're having this podcast episode, Kuka, so thank you. You used the word, I think I counted 4 times there, just of system. And that's really, I think, the thing that sometimes might be baffling for certainly some of the families and schools and students I'm working with, because they start to get their head around just how different US college admissions is, which is obviously quite a big thing to do if you're coming from a very sort of credential-based system like the UK. And then they come across this thing called the University of California and go, hang on, this is a different thing and a different system. Do you mind just explaining then a little bit about what is the, sort of in quotes, University of California? What does that mean kind of legally and practically?
Sure. The state of California was either really able to look into the future and see where colleges were going, or they were just having a lot of fun in the 60s, and they created a master plan. And what it was it created 4 systems of higher education. California community colleges, so institutions that would help students prepare for either certificates or for 4-year degrees eventually. California state universities, which are learn by doing universities in the state of California. The University of California, which is more research and theory based, and then private institutions, of course. So the University of California encompasses 10 campuses, as I stated, 9 of which are undergraduate focused. And those campuses are built on a platform of teaching theory and practicing research. Mm-hmm. So we are looking at how do we serve our community, but also how do we expand globally concepts. The faculty on the University of California campuses work together to work on a list of requirements for admission. So it's not one campus that can go rogue and say, I want to do this or that. That's not how we work. As a system, we have a collaborative head, which is the University of California Office of the President. And that particular collaborative head works to make sure that our faculty are in agreement as we move forward with rules and regulations for admissions, for how we distribute financial aid, for how we do research, for how we distribute that research, so on and so forth. While we're a system, we are still individual campuses, which means faculty on our individual campuses take those rules and regulations and then decide how they'd like to interpret them. So it's the University of California that says all applicants must complete one singular online application. Yeah. That application is read and on my campus, but I'm never going to talk to UCLA or to San Diego or to the other campuses as I'm making a decision. It's my faculty telling me what to do. So it's kind of exciting that you're part of a system and also frustrating that you're part of a system because, well, we're the same, but we're not.
Yeah, agreed, agreed. And it's, I think it's a really important thing for listeners to understand, if you're new to it, to understand the both great benefits, and I think you've explained some of them there that come with that, but also the restrictions that you might have in terms of the processes that have to be followed through. If we sort of get into the admissions piece, then talking about it, when I began trying to explain to maybe a student I'm working with about the University of California, I say it works in a similar principle to how UCAS does in the UK. It's one application, which then goes off through a clearinghouse to the individual campuses, and in almost every single scenario, the stuff that you write for one UC will be the same for everything else. It's just going through a clearinghouse. Yeah, in terms of sort of what students are then having to go through, what is a UC application then? What would a student do if they say, you know what, oh, I just fancy applying for some of the University of California. How different is it going to be from other stuff they're doing in the US?
Ooh, the University of California, we created our own application, so we're not using a third-party vendor. So we can change it as we'd like from year to year, which is really nice. The application has been redesigned. It was redesigned for the class of 2020. So I'm sure
about that. It was very, very nice to use, very glossy. In fact, yeah. you taught me how to use it when we were in the session in Mumbai, Kuka, so I'm grateful.
Happy that it helped. So the application was redesigned with faculty, staff, students, parents, counselors, input. So we're able to change things as needed. But what we ask is a wide range of things. We want to know about a student academically. Of course, all universities do. So we'll ask students to input, self-report their coursework and their grades, their marks. This is the part that's really weird. It means we don't want transcripts and or mark sheets or whatever you want to call them. We don't want them. Instead, students self-report in our application. We then ask about personal life. And this is where a student can tell us about their hobbies and their talents. And if you want to call it something formal, call it a resume, but you can't attach it to our application. Instead, you self-report that as well. We have on our application an opportunity for students to connect with us as individual campuses. And that is the fun part for me as a reader, because what that is our personal insight questions. So part of our requirements to submit a University of California application is that students select from 8 questions, they select 4, and they answer any of those 4, and they talk to us. We don't grade grammar, we don't grade style, we look at content, which is, I think, quite different from other universities.
Yeah.
As we're looking at that, we're assessing, okay, holistically, what is this student bringing to our university? So yes, they've got the marks, but you know what? They've done nothing outside of the classroom, or wow, they're an amazing dancer, singer, soccer player, whatever it might be. This person really is someone who can contribute, but maybe their exams don't showcase everything about how talented they are. So no one part of the application is actually going to be the factor for admission. It's all collectively or comprehensively reviewed, which is often strange to students.
Yeah.
Because there's no formula.
Absolutely.
Our application is submitted. Students can apply to as many of us as they'd like in the month of November. And as they apply to us, they will find that we will collectively request the application, but then we distribute it amongst the campuses they've applied to. And then we stop talking to each other. So I don't know if a student applied to Santa Cruz or Irvine. I'm going to do my thing. They're going to do their thing. And then a student will find their decision out in March. So this month, actually, today is the day the last campus goes out with their decision. So fingers crossed in those last few.
Absolutely. Indeed. And so within that, the kind of systemic thing that you've talked about there in the process, I think it's probably useful for the audience to understand that a lot of these requirements and things, because it is a state university, are actually governed by the state legislature and the governor, and also can sometimes be an area of political debate. In fact, that I know California has a political system that you do vote on a lot of things that can be passed and topics come up. And the University of California budget has been one of those, I know, in recent years, which sometimes has had an impact on the ability to take students from out of state. Do you mind sort of explaining that difference of kind of in-state and out-of-state and where that might impact in terms of budget things?
Sure. The University of California, because we are a public institution, we are responsible for public funds, state funds. And our community, our legislators, are hoping and that we're fiscally responsible agents. And we are responsible, yes. I promise. But what it means is that the state of California and California income funds a number of students. And those students can only be filled with California resident spots. So if I'm a California resident, but I'm at a boarding school in Texas, I'm still a California resident. Every spot available after that is a non-resident student. So if they're in Texas or if they're in the UK, they're in Brazil, doesn't matter. They're a non-resident student. And we quantify those open spaces as non-resident. For many of us, what we find is that we get a large number of applications. The University of California is a popular institution. And so we are able to pick from some of the best students around the globe and our non-resident slots. Now, what we do is we ask our students to apply in the same fashion. So there is no difference in the application process for a student from the UK, from Brazil, from California. Everybody has to fill the same requirements. But the difference for our non-resident students is how we evaluate that information. So a California resident, for example, has a minimum 3.0 GPA in our review process. A non-resident student has a minimum 3.4 GPA. Now, if you're going, hey, that's not fair, we're admitting above minimums.
Yes.
So our students are being competitive against each other when it comes to the review process. But California spots, California students, and then everything else is open to our out-of-state or international applicants.
Absolutely. And when you say it, and you can hear people going, well, that might not be fair. Actually, if we translate that to basically every public university system around the world, and I guess one of the key points I wanted to get across with this episode is that we're talking about a public university system. Students from currently the European Union, but soon to be just the UK, pay less tuition in the UK than kids from outside the UK do. Same in the Netherlands, same in lots of places around the world. And so the UCs we have to see in that light, I guess, rather than it being like, a private institution in the Midwest or on the East Coast of the US.
Thanks.
I'm trying here, Kuga. And so I think actually where some people kind of get lost in this is not understanding some of that nuance. We also talked a little bit about the faculty setting requirements, and I guess I would be remiss if we didn't kind of talk about testing in the context of the University of California. I know it has been a hot issue in terms of the requirements, but the University of California has a particular set of requirements for standardized testing, which actually makes it quite unusual now in the context of the US.
The University of California has a body of faculty that sets the criteria. And if you Google University of California 14 factors for admission, you'll actually come up with a list of 14 freshman factors, one of which is exam testing. We do ask a student at the freshman level to take one exam, just one. I know that people think it's more, but that one exam is either an SAT with the essay or an ACT with writing. And we are probably one of, what, 12 institutions now?
Yeah.
That asks for that. It's a small number. We know it. But that one sitting, so that October test or that December test, is looked at, which is a fancy way of saying we don't super score. Now, a student can take multiple exams. We take the highest sitting, and that gets incorporated as a factor in our review process for freshman applicants. Now, the University of California has heard loud and clear from counselors, from parents, from students, from everybody that it's just a stressful exam. We know it, but it's a way to compare students and their preparation towards the university and their first year success. So what we've done in the University of California is we've created a faculty committee that's reviewing the essay portion of the exam. And then there's another faculty committee that's reviewing the test as a whole to see, is it a good indicator of success? Is it something we should hold students to? And so that's currently happening. It's something that we'll hope to get guidance on by the end of the year. But as of today, March 26th, there is an exam requirement that students must complete.
Yeah, and I should certainly add for the clarity for students advised on the call, every test that you will take that you want to go to University of California, make sure you take the essay or the writing section with it, because Kuka and her wonderful colleagues cannot consider a score if it doesn't also have the writing or the essay attached to it.
It's not complete, and that's the saddest moment when a student says, but I took it without the essay, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, and it's interesting, actually, when you say about the faculty side of things, I think a lot of us in my line of work have been following recently the move of, I'm going to butcher his name, but John Birkenstedt, who very famously was at DePaul and has moved to Oregon State University, going from a private school, which he led the movement for test optional admissions now to a public system at State North of California. And the announcement came yesterday that they are going to be going test optional. But a lot of us have followed John. He's a prolific writer and been on some great other podcasts recently on this about the challenges of moving a public institution. And one of the things, I think he posted a tweet in the last couple of months sort of provocatively, was saying to anyone who follows me who isn't in admissions, who isn't a geek for this like Cooper and I, when we could be dancing to Bollywood music in Mumbai and in fact sitting in the side talking about geeky admission stuff. For those people who aren't like that, who are just faculty at universities, they know the ACT and the SAT to be a test that does those things you're doing for. And though we in admissions on either side of it might know, well, yes, but there are flaws to it and this and that and the other, because the University of California is, that word again, a system, you have to follow a process where the faculty have responsibility for what the requirements are going to be.
And, you know, the thing that's really difficult is there's always going to be an outlier. There's always going to be a student who doesn't benefit them, and then a student where it completely benefits them. There's always that extreme. But for the majority of students, what we found is that it's a way to in other factors included, this being one of them, to see a student's success. And unfortunately, it's a stressful 3 hours in your life that you have to go through.
Yeah.
But you don't have to go at it alone. There's a lot of options, and note that it's a factor. So
yeah.
I'll be honest, I'm a horrible test taker. I hate multiple choice. I always can find each one of the answers. I can make it the right answer,
mm-hmm.
right? So I know that. But the other factors, there are 13 other factors you can play up, right? So if a student is a great rock climber, if a student is an amazing painter, if they're in the choir and they've had 4 years of choir as part of their high school experience, that weighs in and can be a great benefit in the review process, because our faculty have told us, don't just look at academics, look at the whole student.
Awesome. I guess to flip that on its head then, let's talk about the things that in the University of California, again, because it's a system, because you have a legal framework, the things that you can't consider in admissions. Asking this question to you reminds me, going back into the midst of my career, having a counsellor call with our mutual friend Fiona Reese at UCLA. And for those who don't know, a counsellor call would be if you're a counsellor in a sort of accredited high school, that you can get a heads up from the university when decisions are coming out. So I must have, sort of the day before UCLA decisions were coming out, we probably had four or five students waiting on. We wanted a heads up as to what was going to happen the next day. And talking through, and Fiona very kindly explaining the yeses and the noes, and then me saying, great, fantastic, Fiona, really appreciate it, hope you're well. And she said, oh, actually, hang on, David, could you just answer one question for me? This student we've admitted, are they male or female? Because in the process, the name could have been a male name or a female name, or indeed non-binary. That kind of side of things is a very different way the University of California perhaps positively runs admissions compared to, again, what other places in the US really, they do take account of some of these other issues.
We cannot, through the state of California, this is not just the University of California, so the state of California has something called Proposition 209 that says public institutions cannot use gender, religion, ethnicity, race as part of a review process. So you're right, is Sam male or female? Is Aaron male or female? And I don't know. And my best example to my colleagues is, when I say Wendy Wu, what do you think of? Well, do you think of a Latina? Because that's who she was, wow. Right? So you can't even think of a name and go, oh, that constantly this is.
Yeah.
So when we look at applications, many of the UC campuses have actually blacked out, so their readers can't see the name, just so that will eliminate all bias completely. Gender is not part of our review. That's not there. So we look at the application based off of self-reported information. The other thing we cannot do, we cannot Google anything. So if a student starts talking about the Brit Award, or they were nominated for a BAFTA, you better hope that the person reading your application knows what that is.
Yeah.
Because we can't look it up to see, hey, is this something that's normally given out? How many people do they give it to, or how competitive is it? So it's the student's responsibility to set not just the context for their accomplishment, but also what they've learned from that particular activity award or whatever it is that they earned. So that's actually a fun part of reading, is I get to use all of these details that a student gives me. It's also the most frustrating thing, because I can't look anything up. I'm only left with what the student gives me.
Yeah. That's good UK knowledge there with the Brit Award and BAFTA. John Wilkerson, if he's listening along, will be proud of you, Kuka, for knowing that kind of stuff.
Gotta make my husband proud there.
In terms then of that, how that then plays out in terms of what the campuses look like, I'm giving a couple of presentations at the moment, one tomorrow on fit in US admissions. And I'm using actually the University of California. I think it's actually San Diego I've got a picture of, so I'm going to get slapped here. But talking about the fact that, obviously, because we've talked about this, I keep coming, it's a state system. You mentioned some of the figures, the size of UC Santa Barbara as a mid-sized institution. But the student body, in my experience at a UC, is going to feel quite different, actually, in terms of the size, in terms of where they've come from, in terms of maybe the other things that can make up a body of students, compared to maybe smaller colleges in other parts of the US, which can be a little bit more careful, I guess, or deliberate, probably a better word, of how they curate a class of students.
Ooh, gosh, yes. If you look at the different University of California campuses, you're going to see that where they're located differs greatly, right? You've got Merced that's just in the middle of sprawling ranch lands, and it's at the 40 minutes outside of Yosemite. It's right, a great big national park system in the U.S. You've got UCLA that's right there, 30 minutes to 5 hours from LAX.
yeah.
Just kidding, out UCLA. I know that freeway is fine right now. But you also got Santa Barbara, which is in this, you know, this suburb area, but it's locked by the Pacific Ocean and the Santa Barbara Airport. So where the campus is located changes some of the demographic of who chooses to go there. You know, the undergraduate graduate ratio also changes, right? If I'm 90% undergraduate on my campus, it changes who my faculty and who's teaching my lectures are, right? It's also about residents. How many people are living on a campus versus how many are commuting onto the campus? I know that some of us love being commuter schools because it allows more students the flexibility of living at home. But for a student who's coming from the UK or from outside the US, you know, is that a factor for a positive or is that a factor for a negative? And those are questions to ask as you're looking for the right fit. And those are questions that we're expecting to answer from students as well.
Yeah, and as you say, there being with commuters, you know, a UC like Santa Barbara will have a huge amount of kids coming who are, you know, very familiar with Santa Barbara because it's either where they grew up or very, you know, the bigger metropolitan area close to where they grew up, because and that's why they're choosing it.
For us, we're lucky. Santa Barbara is a residential campus. About 80% of students live walking, biking, or skateboarding distance to class. You know, but it's also how the campus is situated. You can't drive through the middle of campus. Yes. It's just building after building and bike paths that weave throughout. Right. So if you have a fear of bikes, we're the wrong campus.
Right.
Santa Barbara and Davis are the wrong campus if you fear bikes. But what's exciting about it is that students can find, hey, you know what? I want to live in a big city and I want to have 1,000 different resources available to me 24 hours a day. And I'm willing to be in a larger school or a smaller school because of that. Those are the questions that students have to ask.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of kids within California, I guess, are, because of the financial things that you mentioned, are going to choose within the University of California system, maybe the Cal State system, or potentially even the go to a community college. That is sort of my very deliberate segue into the kind of last question I want to ask you, Kuka, was, you know, people may have heard this idea of going to a community college and then going on to the UC system. In this extraordinarily confusing world of US admissions, I think that is, you know, the bit where people just go, I just give up. I don't even want to think about that side of it. But and you and I have been talking to a family I've worked with who are most likely going to go down that route for various reasons. A student who goes to a Californian community college is going to be potentially 4 years later in exactly the same situation as a student who directly comes to UC Santa Barbara. Could you explain that situation?
Of course. I know it's very unique to California because we have 100+ community colleges, which is the largest two-year system. And what you're going to find is that the community colleges are the foundation, the first 2 years worth of work. So students will start doing either general education or they'll start figuring out what is my area of study, what's my major. And we can start advising students from day one at their community college on what classes they should be taking if they have an idea of what they want to study. The advice I would give to a student at a community college who's a biology major versus someone who's an English major is going to be different. And what students will find is that in their second year of study, or when they're about to complete 60 semester credits, we're going to ask them to apply to us. And they will be reviewed for what they've already completed in year one of their community college and what they're planning to do in year two. And they can then start year three with us as a junior transfer. So that third year, they pick up their coursework. They're in their major, fingers crossed that they've done everything they were supposed to do. And they ideally can do 2 years at a community college and 2 years with us to finish a four-year degree in 4 years. Now, something that's exciting is that six of the University of California campuses have transfer admission guarantees. with the California Community College. This Santa Barbara is one of them. And that means if I go to Santa Monica College, or if I go to Diablo Valley, if I go to Santa Barbara City College or Oxnard College, I can be part of that guarantee. I have a list of instructions that I have to meet. But once I've done that, I can be admitted to most majors on those six University of California campuses. So it actually could save students money, because the community college is a slightly more affordable route for some students. It can give some peace of mind if there's a community college where you've got a family member and you want to start off there. If you're completely lost and you don't know what you want to study and you want to start at a community college, that's a route too. Or worst case scenario, you didn't get in to your University of California choice and you're ready to hit the ground running. You don't want to wait. You can start at a community college and have one-on-one advising from all the UC campuses for the transfer path. Absolutely. That's a long answer. Sorry.
It's a complicated thing, but it probably is worth saying. And I think what people have in their mind as a community college and what the reality of some of the wonderful facilities and teaching and indeed at some places the residence life at California Community College is awesome. So a really great option.
Yeah, and random fact, there's actually quite a few faculty across UC campuses that will teach at local community colleges or who have guest lectures at community colleges. And some of us even allow community college students to take UC classes on a limited basis. So there's this way to really take a baby step into university through the community college system.
Awesome. Yeah, I didn't know that. That's actually a really great bit of knowledge. I will use that in my advising. Thank you. Kuka, I'm conscious that you know we have decisions coming out. You suddenly have to flip around from admit mode to yield mode, which in recording this in March 2020, yield this year is going to be a word that colleges are going to be focusing on a lot. So I don't want to take up any more of your time. Just very briefly to ask for anyone listening along to this episode who wants to find out more about the University of California in general or the University of California Santa Barbara in particular, where can they go online to find out more information?
I would love for you to visit our University of California admissions page. You can literally type admissions.universityofcalifornia.edu. Those are going to be basic admissions criteria across all nine campuses. But remember, selection. So who is going to say yes to me will vary campus by campus. So if you're thinking of Santa Barbara's campus, admissions.ucsb.edu, and pay attention to our live chat and our webinar features. I'm just super proud of our team. We actually have faculty lectures. So do you want to know what it means to be taught by a world-class physicist? Well, Joanne Candela is doing our lecture in 2 weeks on black holes in space. Maybe you want to know about the Black Plague and or you want to know about Hamilton and how it became the best Broadway musical. Faculty are doing lectures on our live streaming for our students. So if you have questions with current students, all the UC campuses are doing student chats. Make use of those because we want you to learn what are the differences between campuses and what's the right fit. So I'll say one more time, admissions.ucsb.edu. I'm also happy to answer any questions. My email address for your reference is simple, Kuka, C-U-C-A at ucsb.edu.
Awesome. And I'll link all these in the show notes so people can find them easily. Kuka, it's always a great pleasure to chat with you. I always, you know, it takes about 10 minutes, but then your infectious, bubbly personality rubs off of me and I feel better about the world as well. Whether that's just also thinking about gorgeous California, which right now in lockdown in Market Harbour in England feels a very long way away. But I deeply appreciate your time in giving of your opinion. Hopefully it was useful to our audience. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And take care. Stay healthy, everybody.
Now, a few days after recording that interview with Kuka, some news broke in the world of college admissions that, unusually, actually took my breath away. For the 2020-2021 application cycle, the University of California will not require students to take an SAT or an ACT. Now, in the coronavirus situation, increasing numbers of US colleges have been starting to go test optional, either just for one cycle or for a couple of cycles as a pilot, or others, like the whole system in Oregon, have dropped them forever. I've got an updated list on my website, theuniversityguys.com, but this really is an interesting development from the University of California system, and one which I certainly didn't see coming. Hopefully from listening to the interview with Kuka, you've seen just what wonderful opportunities there are within the UCs, but also learned some information about how they have to be approached slightly differently. That's it then for this episode. There's been a lot of episodes coming out in the last couple of weeks. Normal service will be resumed. My next podcast will be a really interesting chat about studying in Belgium.